There's an interesting thing that develops between pastor and church over the course of time, which gives him the ability to deliver messages that he would not be able to deliver anywhere else, because maybe he wouldn't be understood, or the audience, if you will, wouldn't be in the right place or mature enough to receive it in the right way. And so that is one of the beautiful things that the Lord gives to us as a church in that relationship, is to bring to that place where that ability is there with familiarity and maturity in the pew, and pastor knowing his flock and those kinds of things. And so that's the kind of message that we're going to have tonight. We touched on this subject a couple of years ago, and some of you will immediately remember it, at least I hope in part. But as we know, one message never does solve anything, of course, or settle anything in our minds. And so we will return to this subject with just a little bit different, focus tonight. If we were to put a title to our thoughts this evening, it would be manger idols and cross images. Manger idols and cross images. And as you hear that message, or as you hear that title, those words put together to express a thought, immediately your mind begins to react to those words together, and you begin to form an opinion, you begin to form a direction that you think that things are going to kind of go or be presented. And we come to Exodus chapter 20 here tonight, and we want to read just a couple of verses to begin and springboard our thoughts. Really, over the course of the last couple of years, going through this time of year especially and different things, the Lord has had me re-examining how I have always thought about different things. Not certainly doctrinal things and all of that, but we should always be, as Paul told Timothy, making full proof of our ministry. We should always be examining how we are applying our doctrine and our beliefs to make sure that we are doing so in accordance with the Word of God, and not just out of what we want to do or what we've always done. And so, read with me here, Exodus 20, verse number 3. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image, or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them, nor serve them. For I, the Lord thy God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation of them that hate me, and showing mercy unto thousands of them that love me and keep my commandments. Now these two commandments, of course the first two, deal with a similar subject, and that is having other gods before our God. And then, of course, having idols, graven images, statues, physical representations of who God is that we worship in the place of or in the stead of God. And we know that as these commandments were given, they were intended to be a summary of the law. And in that summary, God put an exclamation point and began with these two things because Israel had just came out of Egypt. And as just coming out of Egypt, they had been exposed for hundreds of years to a polytheistic environment in which the Egyptians had gods for everything. And so as they come out, God says, you are not to have or worship any other deity, any other god, any other thing out there besides me. There was to be no other. There is to be no other whatsoever. And that seems to be very straightforward, and it seems to certainly make perfect sense. God is a jealous God. And He doesn't put up with, He's not pleased with, when our attention, when our desire, when our love is put upon anything else. So the Israelites, when they left Egypt, they were to make a clean break. That was hard for them because they had brought a bunch of things with them. They'd even brought some Egyptians with them. And so they were dragging around through the wilderness to Sinai some of the Egyptians' gods even. We know that even while Moses was up on Sinai, what happened? We know that they made a golden calf and began to worship it. And so we can see why God put this in the Ten Commandments and led off with it, because the human condition is to worship something. To worship something. To direct our thoughts and our love or admiration towards something. And he didn't want that to be anything else but himself. And then the second thing, in addition to that, or corresponding to that, was that as they worshiped God as their one and only true God, they were not to do so as the Egyptians had done. Now, the Egyptians, in having all their different gods, which he's already said don't do, they made representations. They made frog statues, and they built temples unto their gods, and they had different idols that were carved. And even in the Egyptian culture, there were goldsmiths who were whose whole dedication or their livelihood was devoted to making those idols, so that each one could have an idol in their home, a shrine to their particular family god that they would worship and they would pray to every day. And so they weren't to have the different gods, but then God also knew that they had learned through watching the Egyptians that worshiping God meant having an idol, meant having something to look at, something to direct themselves towards. And God said, no, I don't want you to do that either. I don't want you to have that physical representation. No, don't make pictures of anything that is in heaven above or earth beneath. Don't bow down yourself unto them. Serve God and God alone. So they weren't to have gods. They weren't to make false idol images of those gods. But they were also not to make anything that would represent a God's creation in order to worship God through that. So we weren't to have different shrines and different temples set up in homes. We weren't to have those kinds of things that we went to and that we would see and that we would bow down to. We were not to make graven images to aid our worship to God or to direct our worship to God. And you ask, why not? Why wouldn't God want us to do that? Well, it's the human condition to want to have something physical to touch, to want to have something physical to direct our attention and our love, our desires to, something to focus on. And the danger is that the focus can get so intently placed upon that physical object that we ascribe glory and honor to it, we deify it, instead of the God that it's supposed to be representing, our God. And so God says, cut that out. We don't want that. Let's not have that whatsoever in our religion. Now, as we find today, we still are to honor this commandment. Just like all the other commands of God, we are to still honor this commandment. We are not to have other gods before Him. We are not to have graven images and worship those graven images. I mean, God is very specific about this. He says, don't make them, don't bow down to them. So don't make those things with the purpose, with the idea, with the understanding you're going to bow to them and worship me through them. Okay? So He says, don't do those things. In our culture today, idolatry in that sense, graven images in that sense, it's not really an issue, is it? Now, certainly there are some areas of our country or pockets of our society that are Buddhist or that are Hindu, and they still have those. There's plenty of Chinese, perhaps, in our country, and they have those shrines. And I understand that. But by and large, our society is not given to the bowing down to idols. Our society has really gotten to the place where it's about as atheistic as it can be, and I say that full well knowing it's only going to get more so over the course of time. And so they're not out there looking for the next God and the next image and the next idol. Instead, we, in our society, tend to worship things. And by doing so, we put them in the place of God. We violate the first commandment more than we violate the second. That's what I'm trying to say. In our society, that is our bend. Our bend is to violate the first more than the second. It comes naturally to us to put job or family or career or money or whatever in front of God and turn it into something we worship. more so than it is for us to go down to the local sculpture maker and have him make a sculpture for us to take home and we bow down to in our homes. That is not so much of an issue in our society today. We are certainly not given to graven images as much in our culture, but we still have to avoid the draw of them to our flesh. And that sort of is the backdrop that I wanted to kind of set up to frame our thought and our discussion tonight. And that is, about the manger, about the cross. And over the course of time, these last few years, I've been giving a lot of thought to it, different discussions, a lot of things. And when you think about these two images in particular, they are polarizing. There are people in our fellowship, people that you know, people you love and respect, that when they see a manger scene, they about have a fit. They have a visceral response to the point where they, are upset. They are visibly shaken or just completely taken aback. Same with the image of the cross. If that image is put before them in something that is given to them or whatever, it is very off-putting in a great way. And a lot of it has to do, I think, with the graven image commandment, the desire not to break it. And so over the course of time and hearing preaching growing up, being trained in the ministry and those kinds of things, that was drilled into me in a lot of ways. And so I had the same visceral reaction. You see the cross and you're like, oh, I can't believe that. That's terrible. Why is that on that? Why is that displayed on that church? Oh, well, you know what they believe. That's just ridiculous kind of thing. Same this time of year when you see the manger scenes, it would sort of be in the same way, sort of off-putting. And you'd be like, well, I guess you know what, that they're more focused on this. They're not lifting up the cross or they're not lifting up Christ and his death thereon. And so it kind of gave you that reaction in a lot of ways. And so in thinking about all of that, I really think that in some ways we're missing the mark if we go in that direction. And this is why I say this kind of message has to be a preach to a target audience that is mature in their belief, mature in their understanding of the Word of God. Because, let's be honest, there are trappings in these symbols. There are trappings and dangers in these symbols. They're associated, of course, with the Lord Jesus Christ in various aspects of His birth, His life, His death. But when we think about them, when we really stop to ponder the scene of the cross, even the image of the cross, when we stop to think about or see a manger scene as it is displayed so often this time of year, what does it say to you? And I'll admit, it took me some time to get past all of the things that I was sort of conditioned to think, conditioned to respond because of those things. And so what does it say to you when you see those things? What does it say when you see that instrument of death that brought our salvation? What does it make you think of when you see that manger scene, whatever way that it's represented? And we'll talk about it more in a minute. But what does it make you think about? Does it make you think, oh, well, that's a violation of the first commandment. That's ridiculous, kind of thing. And for some, that is the case. And I don't want to, drag anybody down or point fingers at anybody. But the point is that we have to be able to balance in our lives as we serve the Lord. We have to be able to balance everything in our life in this capacity. We have to be able to look at what is before us and be able to take what it says to us without letting it become to the place where we worship that thing instead. And here, I think, is what has happened over the course of time. And this is just one preacher surmising, one preacher's ramblings to his church tonight. I think that we have, over the course of time, made made an idol out of the manger, out of the cross, but not in the way people think. We have made it so in such a way that people are proud of their response towards it. Oh no, that's we don't have anything to do with that. Oh no, you won't find any crosses in my house whatsoever. You know, and so we've made an idol out of it. We're proud of that. When I say we, I'm just talking about Baptist churches in general. I don't mean we as just in us here tonight. And so, in doing so, we build ourselves up, like some people have done on the subject of dress. They say, look at us and how godly and pious we are because of what we do. And they make a god or an idol out of that. And you could go on and on listing those things. And so, we have had the idea that these things, are wrong to see. And again, some recoil at them. But the question is, what are we supposed to do to him or do with him? First of all, again, understand that there are trappings associated with any physical object. Anything. Now, you have heard, no doubt over the course of time, we are accused of worshiping this Bible. Right? I mean, people say that. The King James Bible, people accuse us of worshiping it instead of God, because we will only accept the King James Bible. So what do? Do we distance ourselves from it? Do we put it away? Do we say that this is an image or a physical thing, and so we'd better distance ourselves from it because we don't want anybody to think that we worship it? Certainly we don't. That would be ridiculous, wouldn't it? And so the bottom line is, if our affection, our adoration, our love, our commitment is directed to them primarily, and we make a physical thing holy, and by holy I mean that not just set apart for the Lord's use, in a sense all of these things in this room, in this building, are so, but I mean that we give it a righteous, holy properties. We ascribe it to that physical object, and we think that just by looking at it or holding on to it, Or displaying it somehow, we are participating in a religious act, or we are doing something that is holy and has saving properties and all those kind of things, then we've gone too far. Then we've made, of course, a graven image, an idol out of it, instead, of course, of worshiping the Lord. And secondly, let us understand, when we think about what are we to do with these images, and we're just pulling these two out because they are the most visceral as far as our response to them, and our conditioning over the course of time. But let us understand that there were times in the Old Testament where symbols were used to remind people of all that the Lord had done for them. Symbols were used many times over for the things that God had done for them in their life. They had memorials and Ebenezers, didn't they? They had the times like when Joshua led the people over over the Jordan River. God said, pick up some stones, carry them across. As you carry those stones across, build a memorial. It's in Joshua 4, verse 21. It says, and he spake unto the children of Israel, saying, when your children shall ask their fathers in time to come, saying, what mean these stones? They were there for a purpose. It was a physical thing that could be looked to. A physical thing that could have direction or your mind directed to. Your thoughts even. When you were separated from it, you could think about what you had seen. You could think about, okay, that represents, that reminds me of how Israel came across the Jordan River at this place and inhabited the Promised Land. Was there danger in people coming to that memorial to worship it? Sure there was. I mean, we're human. Something great happened there. Israel, of course, was somewhere between 1 million, 2 million, with the Egyptians added, could have been 3 million people. You don't think out of 3 million people that somebody might have had the notion, like Peter did the once when he said, let's build a tower, let's stay here, Lord, on top of the mountain. Somebody well-intentioned coming to that memorial, bowing down to it, sacrificing something there, whatever it may have been. Yeah, did that keep God from telling them to build it? Did that keep God from giving it to them as a gift of memory? Certainly not. We're here in Exodus. Turn back to chapter 12. We kind of went through chapter 12 last week concerning the ashes of the Passover and them being left behind, the blood thereof as well. But notice here in verse number 26, as he led them through the observance of the Passover and the fact that when they come into their promised land, they would still do it. Verse 26, and it shall come to pass when your children shall say unto you, what mean ye by this service, that ye shall say, it is the sacrifice of the Lord's Passover. That service was given as a memorial. Just as the Lord's Supper we're going to observe in 2 weeks. It was given as a memorial that they would what? They would remember in time to come. Now in all of the observances since, do you think that it's possible that some have taken it to the extreme and worshiped the service instead of God? Certainly so. I mean, you can see abuses of it, even in the Old Testament, times when they couldn't observe it for a space of time because of sin and different things. But did that stop God from giving it to them? No. He gave it to them for the reason. And so if there were some that they knew in Israel that were abusing it, that were worshiping it instead of God, perhaps there were some that said, well, if they're going to do that, it's probably best if we don't do anything at all. I don't want to be associated with that. And so they distanced themselves the other way. I mean, I don't have scripture to back that up, but that's just a picture of what is happening today with some of these things that we're bringing up. And we see that images were used. I was brought to memory of the high priest's garments. What did he have on his breastplate? He had those precious stones that represented all 12 tribes of Israel right there. Right there to serve as a reminder. Was that a graven image? No. It wasn't made for the purpose of worshiping God or for them to worship that image. It was made for the purpose so that the high priest would have Israel on his heart, on his breast as he went in to make the sacrifice. It aided. A physical object aided in that worship. In that time that they had in worshiping in the temple. So whether you're thinking about the stones and the building of the memorials, I mean, were they thinking about all the altars? Abraham and Joshua, they left a dotted landscape of altars behind, of places. In those places, there were those altars, and you know what? Many times, there were even names that they gave to those places so they could be reminded of what God had done. Think about Abraham on Mount Moriah, and he named that place so that he would always remember that the Lord had provided salvation. So this means that there can be an appropriate use of symbols. As long as it's balanced with the fact that we are not using them in worship to worship that image, to worship those things. And so here's what has happened somewhat over the course of time. Now, we don't have them in our church services because of that very reason. If you looked at a cross every time I stood in the pulpit, there is the possibility, even the probability, that there would be a few that perhaps would think, well, I can't worship God without seeing a cross, or something like that. So it makes sense not to have those images where we worship God on a regular basis, that they might actually hinder or that they might be misused. But does that mean that we just cast them off altogether? Does that mean that we don't think about them or that we recoil to the point of disgust when we see them? I think not. And then thirdly, let us remember the words of the Apostle Paul. Go to Philippians chapter 4. And this is a verse we used a couple years ago. And I think, and I didn't go back and really look at the exact thoughts we brought out then, but I believe it was directed more at our attitude towards this time of year, more so than the direct images and things that we're talking about tonight. But what Paul says here in Philippians chapter 4 is so on point with so many things in our life. we would do well to apply it as such. Philippians 4, verse number 5, let your moderation be known unto all men. Let your moderation be known. I guess what I'm saying to you tonight is that we should be able, in a place of maturity in Christ, to see a symbol of the cross and be taken back to what Christ has done for us. We should be able to be confronted with a manger scene, even, dare I say, seek one out to see, that we might be taken back to that glorious night when Christ was born in December, in September, in July, whenever it was. We can be taken back to that place. We can be reminded of that. Now, we need to see that moderation. And so we should not take it to the extreme, of course, in either direction. Thinking on these symbols can be very encouraging, can be a great blessing, can be a wonderful encouragement to us, may draw us closer unto the Lord. That may, in fact, cause us to think about things that we had never even considered before. I mean, if you just sit and ponder, and it may just be in your mind thinking about what a nativity scene would look like to you, a manger scene, whether it's seeing one in person, and you just sit there and you meditate for a few minutes upon it, your mind and your heart begins to be flooded with the thoughts on Joseph's mind. The thoughts about, you know, what's on Mary's heart. You begin to think about the shepherds and how they had rushed to, to find him, and all of the passers-by, you know, that were in Bethlehem at this time, even those that were in the inn, you know, perhaps that were exposed to some of this commotion. You know, all of those things, you begin to roll around in your mind and begin to think about why, because you saw a picture. Not that you're worshiping yet. You know, and the error that some people make is that they see putting out a manger scene or displaying a cross as a religious act of worship. And somehow that by doing that, I'm okay with God. And somehow by doing that, I'm glorifying God and I don't have to do anything else kind of thing. And so we need to understand that that's certainly a wrong attitude. But then again, so is, I think, recoiling to the point where we find no value in it at all. I mean, there is some within even our fellowship of churches that will not get into Matthew 1 or Luke 1 and 2 the whole month of December. They won't do it. They will just stay away from it altogether because they don't want anybody to think that they believe Christ was born this time of year. They don't want anybody to think that they're in any way celebrating the birth of Christ. And you know what they say? This is what I've always heard. This book doesn't tell us to celebrate the birth of Christ. And that's true, it doesn't. It does not tell us at all to celebrate the birth of Christ, but you know what? It doesn't tell us to ignore it either. It really doesn't. In fact, we find in Matthew 1, Luke 1 and 2, Isaiah, you know, the prophecies about it, Micah, those places, we're told about it. And it's something that we should pay attention to, bring out and focus on, because we would not have anything without the virgin birth of Jesus Christ. And that certainly is the case. So this time of year especially, we know, is ripe with manger scenes. And there can be danger in the manger if we leave Christ therein. We need to, as we look at it, realize, of course, that he grew up and that he became a Savior and died upon a cross. And so we need to be, when we talk to people, use that as a way to preach him out of the manger, onto the cross, out of the grave, and into heaven. I mean, in their lives and in their understanding. And so we need to be open, I think, to this. And so don't take it to the extreme, but be open to it. There's a place down in Middletown that has something called a Bible walk. This time of year, it's a big field on a farm that's set up for you to walk around, a pretty big place. And they start with creation, and they have signs set up that are painted and then lights decorated, holiday lights. And they tell the story of the Bible from beginning to end. They start with creation and a picture, and then they go on and on and on through the story. And you see different scenes and different things. And so as you come to and stand before that manger scene, You know, you think about different things. As you go further in time and, you know, and see the progression of Christ's life, they take you to the cross, you stand before that cross and look and think about those things, you know, that happened thereon, and the fact that He died on that cross for me, just being surrounded by all of the story. And then they don't leave it there. You see an empty grave. And then, of course, angels and what's supposed to represent the resurrection and then the ascension days, months later. And so it does tell the whole story. So I guess my point is, when you go through something like that, you're confronted with those images. You have two choices. You either worship them or you recoil at them. I mean, that seems to be the two only choices. I'm trying to tell us tonight we need to have a third choice. Look at those things. Let them direct you unto Christ. Learn from them. I mean, you know, something I had never thought of before. We had a little devotional that our family's been doing about this time of year and about the birth of Christ and those kinds of things. And the person that wrote this devotion pointed out or asked the question, what do you see at the center of every manger scene? There's Christ, right? I mean, just something as simple as that. He's there, you know, and of course they take on many different forms. Some are kind of over the top and ridiculous. Some, aren't factual whatsoever and look very, very funny. But, you know, and most of them right at the middle, there's Christ. You zoom out a little more and you see Mary and Joseph, and zoom out a little more, you see the shepherds and the animals. You see all of these things. But there at the middle is Christ. And that's where He's supposed to be in our lives every single day. I think we have the idea that we can at times approach life and what we see, and we can somehow rip away our religion. We can rip away our relationship with God and just, okay, we're going to celebrate or we're going to enjoy December 25th as a family holiday and all that kind of thing. And Christ wasn't born now. We're not celebrating that and all that. We kind of rip it away. But where in the Bible do we find that that's a good thing, a healthy thing? Instead, we see that we carry Christ with us everywhere we go. He is the unseen guest at every meal. He is with us at every moment, no matter what we're doing. And so when we gather together to celebrate a holiday, no matter what holiday it is, there He is. He's with us. And so we have to be careful and not dishonor, disrespect Him, and all those kinds of things. But we also shouldn't necessarily shy away. So what's wrong with being reminded of the virgin birth of Christ, the humble manger scene? What's wrong with being reminded about the shepherds that dropped everything and ran and told everybody what they'd seen in the sky that night and the angels? What's wrong with being reminded of those things, whether it's this time of year or whether somebody put up a manger scene in June? I mean, nobody's going to probably want to go see it, but it doesn't matter when it is. And so what's wrong with that? To see that symbol, to have that representation. And so we miss out, I think, on being reminded because we are so, or we have been in the past, I have been in the past, so bent on trying to be technically correct, if you will. And that robs away a lot of times our own growth. It robs away our fellowship with the Lord. It robs away so many different things. I heard it put this way sometime. The Bible is a narrow book. We know that. It's very narrow. But you can actually get to the place where you are applying what the Bible teaches in a more narrow fashion than the Bible even does itself. And so we need to be in understanding of that. And the manger is not the only one. The cross is a loss to us many times because we shy away from seeing the symbol thereof. And again, I don't want to adorn the church with a bunch of crosses. I think that would detract from the worship of the Lord. But I know at least in our home, a lot of times we see something we like and we're like, oh, it's got a cross on it. You know, and we're like, for a lot of years, I was like, no, some because you're afraid who might see it. You know, and oh, they'll think bad things about you, that kind of thing. Well, that's foolish. That's silly. You know, if you can look at the cross and see what Christ has done for you, if you can use that image as a reminder. I mean, we tell people all the time, go to the cross. How are they going to do that without looking at it? Without seeing the symbol of it and what transpired thereon. The danger is that it can be seen as an altar, a place of worship. But the cross was not the altar even upon which Christ was sacrificed. It would take a long time to unpack this thought, but Christ was a sacrifice and he's the altar upon which he was sacrificed and offered unto the Lord. The cross was not the altar. We don't go there to worship it. But instead the one who died thereon. Now, in respect to the cross directly, I think that the movement away from that image has always been because it was Catholicism's image. I mean, Constantine formed the religion because he had seen the symbol of the cross written on the sky and clouds or whatever it was, the dream that he had. That's why. And so it became the symbol of the Catholic Church, it was on a lot of the Roman shields and different things. It represented Roman Catholicism. And so, of course, they were our greatest persecutor, arch enemy throughout the Dark Ages, that emblem being blazoned in. I can understand why at some point that it was, of course, something that was completely... We don't want that in our church. We don't want that in our house. We don't want people to think that we're associated with the Catholic Church or with what they believe. That has been the case over the course of time. And so we have completely stayed away from it in that way. But the times we live in today are far different. And the symbol of the cross to the average person in the world today is just a religious symbol. And so the example I threw out last night to my wife as we were discussing this, say, and I'm not going to do it, but if I were to put a bumper sticker on my car that had a cross on it, driving down the road, and average Joe pulls up behind me at a stop sign and he sees the cross on the bumper sticker, what's he going to think? He's going to think, well, that guy is religious. He must go to church. He must in some way have a relationship with God. And that's what he's going to think, right or wrong. By me putting that bumper sticker on there doesn't mean that I am, right? And that's what some people would think. But that's what he's going to think. Why in the world would he think, well, that man, that guy's worshiping an image. That guy's breaking the second commandment, and all that kind of thing. Why would he think that? Of course he wouldn't. So there is middle ground here that we can find and that we can employ, that we can have. And so we need to be very careful, very judicious, and very moderate about how we explore and how we find where we need to be. In a lot of ways, that is us taking it very seriously and seeking the will of the Lord, showing us how we can use those things in moderation to please Him and to help us to grow. And so, like many things, we abstain because of the abuse of some. Or, like some things, we abstain because of the vitriol that we hear on the other side, that people say, well, you're terrible if you do this. Well, let the Lord decide if I'm terrible or not. And we kind of, either way we go, we are catering to the lowest common denominator. Either way. Instead of building up, instead of doing those things. Now, still, if you come over to our house, you're not going to see a bunch of crosses. But over the course of time, I have become less worried about those things. Because I know that as the father of my home, as the husband of my home, we are not employing those things in worship. And so, if they are there, perhaps they will lead us and perhaps they will remind us. I don't have one, but what if I carried around a small cross in my pocket? What would some of the brethren think about that? And I'm not saying I do. I'm not advocating that you do. But what if I had one of those in my pocket during the course of my busy day as I had to talk to people or deal with people or go about my job, and just putting my hand therein and feeling it would remind me. Remind me of Christ. And I know the Catholic Church uses it as a rosary and it gets into worship. So you have to be, this is why I said, you have to understand exactly where we're going with this. But there is and can be a use. You might leave here tonight and say, well, that's what I've done all my life, and that's great. You might leave here tonight and say he's crazy, or he's advocating that we worship idols. That's not the case either. But we find that there can be some benefit in these things. There's nothing wrong with thinking about the image of the cross. And some people would say, well, you know, you're worshiping a cross, you're worshiping an image. You know, it's just a couple of pieces of wood. Yes, it is, but it's an empty cross, isn't it? It's empty because he died. He was buried. You know, you think about an empty tomb. That's a picture that comes to your mind. And all those things serve to make it so that we can be connected with what God has done for us, just like in many other cases in the Old Testament. And so the Lord really burdened my heart to examine those things, to not be as dogmatic, if you will, about seeing them, but instead looking for the good in them and directing my family to see that as well. And that's really the point tonight, but to unpack all of those things. It's not a simple, straightforward thought. You got to go through a process, but that's the basis or the basic point, is to see the good in it. Let it take you in your mind unto the Lord. Don't get sidetracked either way, and be able to rejoice in them, because without the manger, without the cross, we would have no salvation whatsoever. And both point to, both celebrate Jesus Christ. They really do. And there are opportunities this time of year for people to see those things, to be exposed to Christ, unlike really any other time of the year. And so we need to take advantage of those things. Let's stand. Let us be dismissed in a word of prayer tonight.